The following podcast is part of a special oral history program titled The RSL, A Time to Celebrate. The program documents fascinating and personal stories and experiences of veterans across South Australia. The program received funding through the Veteran and Community Grants stream in partnership with the Tanunda RSL sub-branch and the Emu Tree, and was produced by Christian Teusner. I encourage listeners to take their time to explore as many of these stories and adventures as possible. For further information, visit www.theemutree.com. Today is the 3rd of June 2020. I'm here at Loxton RSL with Robert Manuel. Thank you, Robert, for participating in the RSL A Time to Celebrate. Could I please get you just to state your full name, date of birth and your service number, please?
Robert Ian Manuel, born 18/1/1951 at Corunda, and my service number is 44798. I was born at Corunda, and I was one of five brothers. I was a middle one, and as you know, the middle child always misses out. And we're on a farm down at in between Mindry and Hallerton, about 3,500 acres, wheat farm, which we run sheep, cattle, pigs, anything to survive in those days. As kids and that, well, we spent a lot of time helping Dad work the farm, driving tractors and carting wheat, carting hay, milking cows, helping shearing sheep and feeding pigs. Just kept going on and on.
Good times?
Yeah, no, they were good times and that. And to make money and that, my brother Barry and I, we used to hook the horse and cart up, and on the school holidays we used to go out trapping rabbits and that. We used to run about 70 or 80 traps, and our old horse, old Tommy, and that, well, we used to just yell at him and he'd come to us and that, so we didn't have to keep chasing him. And old Tommy, he lived until he was 26 years old, died of a heart attack evidently. Yeah, and as I got older and that, we got old bombs and that, so then we got rifles and we started going around, driving around the road, shooting rabbits, and that was always a good income for us.
What age were you at this point?
I think I started about 10, I reckon. I started trapping rabbits with my brother Barry, 10, and that until I was probably 15. I used to only do it in the holidays because I had to go to high school at Loxton, which is another experience. Mum used to bring us up, and then I'd stay up here for about a month, and then we'd go home to the farm for a weekend and you go back for another month. Yeah, I boarded with my grandparents and that for those years, which strained my relationship with them. They're old Germans and that, and they pretty strict. Made a bloke go to church every Sunday, sometimes twice on a Sunday. Sometimes when they were talking about me, they were speaking German, you know, when I've done something wrong or whatever. After I finished high school and that, I went back on the farm to help Mum and Dad. After being on the farm for 6 months and that, I joined the army for 6 years. I was going to do a trade as a motor mechanic. But once I got in the army, talking to other guys and that, because Vietnam was going on at the time, so I decided that I'd put infantry down as my corps of choice, infantry, artillery and engineers. So consequently, I got infantry after recruit training and that.
What age were you when you...
I was 17. I had to wait until I turned 17 before I could actually join the army. And they sent me application in. When I went down to do my medical, and that was sort of a different experience for someone from the farm. My dad took me down and he took his mate down, and so like they do in those days and that, he dropped me off at Pirie Street and Dad and his mate went to the pub. And so then I went in and booked in and you do an IQ test. I figured I must have did all right in that because later on they said I was off of some potential, which I found it hard to believe. And then when we actually did the medical and that, you know, like you stand in the jocks and that, you know, like they bend over, touch your toe, drop your docks down and bend over and touch your toes and that, and I thought, bloody hell, what's going on here? You know, it was a bit of a, you know, awakening. And so anyway, and then this corporal comes around and that to the front, and then he grabs me by the left nut, turn you to rot and cough, and right, then the other nut and turn the opposite way, and I'm, hey, what the hell's going on here? You know what I mean? It was sort of quite embarrassing, and that. Then I figured that after, you know, all these years and that, I figured the reason they did that is that they grab you by the nuts is, you know, the bigger the balls you got, the braver you're going to be. Consequently, our infantry is core training. And it was only a couple of years ago that was at the Vietnam Vets and was talking to this young fella, just been accepted into the army. And I asked him and that, and I said to him, you know, when I had me medical, and they grabbed me by the nut, head and turn your head one way and turn your head the other way and cough and all that sort of stuff. And I asked him to do that, and he says, oh, he just put his hand and held both my nuts and told me to cough. And then I said to him, and what corps did you get? And they said, transport. So that proved me theory. So, you know, eventually in that, when I went to the army and that, with corps training, because it's all different, new to me and that, you know, to get up early in the morning, go for a run and do all that sort of stuff and that. And I can distinctly remember after about 6 weeks and at about 5 o'clock in the morning, I'm laying on my bed and I think, you know, what in the bloody hell have I got myself into here, you know? And so, you know, it's just so different to our life, you know?
Did you find that farm life physically was a good preparation for you?
Oh, yeah, in a way, no, but we never, on the farm we played footy and all that sort of stuff, but never constantly were moving, you know, for, you know, 8 hours a day. You know, we were, like, if you're working, you know, when you're carting wheat and that, you know, like you're into it for 20 minutes and then by the time you're driving to the silo and that, you know, you've got a 20-minute, a half-an-hour break time you get there and then you're into it again for a quick 20 minutes and then you sit down and you're driving back again, you know, but it wasn't just continuous. Or, you know, if you're driving a tractor, you know what I mean, you just sit going around and around, you know. When you were carting hay, it was still a bit the same, you know, you're into it for a... Because we used to stook hay and that, the old sheaves, and chuck them up top of the truck. And then, but yeah, you do a load and then you get the break in between and then you unload and keep going.
But stop, start.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, but it wasn't just continual.
So whereabouts did you do your core training?
Kapooka and that, yeah. And when I was there and it was bloody cold, freezing cold, you get out and go for a run and it was bloody ice and so I did my core training in April.
What would you do to keep yourselves entertained?
See, most nights and that, you know, like during the week and that, we had training afterwards. You go and have tea, and then at 7 o'clock you go and do something else until about 9 o'clock. And by the time you're finished and that, you just basically straight to bed, or, you know, you'd have a bit of talk around, because they had lights out at 10 o'clock, I think it was.
So lights out at 10 p.m.
10 o'clock, I think it was, yeah, 10 o'clock. So you didn't have a lot of time, you know, for yourself and that. And then on the weekends and that, you know, we were able to go to the boozer and stuff like that. I can't remember whether we trained weekends or not. I think we did. You know, for the first 6 weeks, I reckon we did.
So how long were you stationed at Kapooka?
I think we were there for 12 weeks. And we did our march out. After that, I went to Ingleburn, to the infantry corps. A bit more liberal or less, you know, less rigid. We had the core training and that. It wasn't as, you know, full on. So we did a lot of bivouacs and stuff like that. We'd go out and in the Mittagong Ranges, I think it was, out there for, you know, 3 or 4 days and learn a bit of bushcraft, do a bit of compass reading and stuff like that, which was, yeah, it's good fun.
Was it? Yeah, it was good times.
I enjoyed core training more than I did recruit training and that. And, you know, we used to go to King's Cross and places like that on the weekends. We had our weekends off.
What age are you here while you're doing...
17.
Infantry training. You're still 17?
Yeah, I was 17 on the 1st of January.
So at this point in time, with all the training, what was the year at this point?
68, I think it was. Yeah, 1968.
Did you have any idea of what lay ahead for you?
No, didn't have a clue. All I knew, there was going to be lots of guns to shoot with and stuff like that. And that, none of my family had been in the army, you know. I think one of my uncles was in World War II, but only as a card. So I had no idea what was really happening.
Would it be fair to say that majority of young men, that would be exactly the case for them too?
In those days it would have been, yeah. Because when the recruit training and that didn't quite explain a lot of what was happening. Hell, if they told me that I'd be getting up at 6:30 in the morning and going for a bloody run for half an hour before I had breakfast and that, I didn't know whether I'd be into that. I got posted to a Nogra where 2 Battalion was, and 2 Battalion had only just come back from Vietnam, and so there wasn't many people there in the battalion. And that, and so all of us 17-year-olds basically got sent to a battalion that wasn't going overseas, you know, for a couple of years until we turned 19. When I went to Vietnam and that, I was 19 in about 3 months.
Did that seem like a long wait for you at that point, but being, you know?
Yeah, well, it was. But see, we were tied up in, we were enemy in that, you know, if the other battalions were going to Shoalwater Bay and doing exercises with them, but we were playing the enemy in that. A lot of that, Shoalwater Bay, and then the battalion in December and that of that year, we moved to Townsville and set up there. And so the first 6 months or so on that, we were just getting set up, and we were doing a little bit of, a few courses now, like we're doing our NCO courses, like corporal, lance corporal, sergeant's courses and stuff like that, as to give us something to do, which is, you know, pretty good. We ran amok in Townsville a fair bit. That was good fun. You know, the old story and that. On the first Friday, first weekend, you're rich, and the second weekend, you're poor, poor as a mouse. You blow our dough. But unfortunately, because I was only 17, I wasn't supposed to be drinking because I was underage, because Queensland was 21 years old, but no one ever stopped us. We used to go on the booze and have a good time. It was good fun.
Any moments in particular stand out in your mind? That
we had one guy, he was only 19 too, and his name was Farquhar, Alan Farquhar, and he used to, you know, he used to do boxing when he was young. He used to think he'd fight, and so we'd be out having a few beers and he'd pick a fight. We'd have to step in and defuse it, you know. And then one night, and that he was really getting carried away, and here is, he picked on this guy at about 6'4", probably weighed about 110 kilos and that, and he was pretty this guy was pretty angry and that, and so we just shot out of the door and I left him. We weren't going to deal with that guy, you know. Normally in that you could, you know, most time you can defuse and that, but sometimes you can see and that, and they just want to fight. And so we just head off and leave him to it, bugger him.
What happened?
He run. Finished up and that, he realised he had to run as well. But it was funny. But, you know, like, I used to drink with a guy named Graham Morgan. He came from near Morwell. He used to have this old Falcon and that. One night we were doing a bit of a pub crawl and that. We'd stop at the sunset and had a couple of beers, and we'd go to the next pub, have a couple of beers, and then we'd drive on to the next pub and have a couple of beers, and of course in Townsville and that, and there's about 10 or 12 pubs in the main thing and that. And anyway, and that, we got to the Langs and we stayed there a bit longer. And we were starting to get a little bit full. And anyway, and that Graham was too full to drive, and so I decided I'd drive. So we're driving down the street and everyone's yelling at us, and Graham says, "Oh, gee, these people know us." And that, anyway, yeah, yeah. And so we were waving at them and bang, I hit a bloody detour sign. And that, and then we realised it didn't have the bloody lights on. So then we quickly went back to the barracks. And that, no damage. But it was an interesting night.
Survived to tell the tale.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. Townsville was good fun.
Yeah, a lot of good memories.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. A couple of you know, sometimes, you know, you'd have a little girlfriend for a while and that sort of stuff, but you couldn't have anything long-term because you were going to Vietnam, and so you made sure you didn't keep anything long-term, you know. Bit of fun.
So how did you feel at this point, knowing that, you know, the day was getting closer that you were going to be making that trip?
I think a little bit apprehensive in that, but I think you were excited, you know. You felt, you know, we're ready to go. You know, you hear about the casualties and stuff like that. And being young and that, you're a little bit bulletproof, you know, that's not going to bloody happen to me. As it turned out, it didn't.
So how did you travel from Townsville then, when the day came?
With the army and that, you always find that sometimes they work out, they can, you know, rip you off or stitch it up you and that. So what happened to us is that, I think it was on the 16th, 15th of May, flew to Townsville by Qantas, went near Singapore and that, landed there and landed at Saigon. I reckon we might have flown back by Caribou to Nui Dat at that stage. You know, that was right, and so we settled in. But when it came for us to come home, the Sydney left Sydney on the 15th of May, 16th of May, and so by the time they got and picked us up, it was June. And so we did an extra 10 days in country, you know, ripped off, stitched off, you know, whereas they should have picked us up by aeroplane, like, you know, you'd think they would.
Must have been pretty frustrating.
It was. Oh, well, it was, to a point, you know, but we didn't know a fair while back that we were going back by the Sydney. And so we were on like the slow boat back from China. And we sat around, relaxed, and did bugger all, you know, for 10 days. You know, it was good. But when we first got to Vietnam and that, you know, because the humidity and that, the bar was open, so we all had three or four cans, and that, and the bar was only out for half an hour, and so we went back. And then when they called parade and that, most of them were all flaked out in their beds, because we were bloody half-pissed and that, and the bloody platoon sergeant was yelling and screaming to get us out on parade. Which, you know, it was quite funny in that, you know, the humidity and the grog just knocked us straight over.
So it take a bit of time to settle?
Yeah, it did, the humidity in it. That was pretty hard. I guess, you know, when I was on parade and that, the artillery opened up and then we all hit the deck, you know, and turned sides, what's wrong with you silly bastards, you know, toughen up. We thought the artillery was coming in on us to start off with, you know, so.
And how far away was it?
Oh, they were, I don't know, about a K away where they were firing from, because you know, the Nui Dat was all in one area, right, frightened the hell out of us, but, you know, again, it's not as frightening as when it's landing near you either. You know, when you're on the other end of it, when you're calling in support. So, yeah, that was good fun. It was interesting.
I'm really interested to explore early experiences and what it was like.
Yeah.
You know, for you as a young man.
Mm. When we, on our first operation we went on that, we went out, not to all, you know, some mountain range of that. And because we were there and that, you know, like it's so bloody hot and humid and that, and we were following these tracks, and all of a sudden that bang, 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 half a dozen shots and that, and, you know, we're in a platoon, so we all hit the deck, and what's going on, you know, what's going on, you know, we're all wondering what's going on, and the forward scout's armour light fired two shots and jammed, and then the machine gun only fired a couple of shots and jammed as well. All we heard was, you know, one enemy dead, all that sort of stuff, and then afterwards we heard about the guns jamming and all that sort of stuff, and so then that made us, every time we cleaned our guns and that, rifles, that were so much more bloody careful than that, to know that the humidity and all that sort of stuff can make a misfire. I had a SLR and that, but they never misfire, you know, but the armour light and the machine gun do, you know. You know, and frightened bloody hell out of us, you know, to, you know, if it'd been more than one, it could come along. So after wandering around for 6 weeks, sleeping on the ground and on the hills and doing gun picket, we went back to Nui Dat, had a shower. The fact that we wore the same clothes for bloody 6 weeks was pretty hard too. Every couple of weeks they'd bring us out a change of socks or something like that. Your greens would just about stand up, you know, thick and everyone stunk and that, but you didn't realise that because everyone else stunk. You stunk, and they.
So what were the challenges with that? Like you were talking there about, you know.
You do gun picket every night and that, and you do 2 hours, and so you wake at daylight, wake at, and then you basically go to bed at dark, or you sit around and talk a little bit, but you couldn't do nothing, it's fully tactical. You're pretty weary, because at the end of it, and then when you come back and you have a shower and clean up, and then you've got to do mess duties and gun picket there again, you know, like it was always continually. might have been lucky because you come back for about a week and then you go to Vung Tau for a day and a half, two nights in Vung Tau, a bit of rest and recreation and boozing and carrying on.
How important was that?
Yeah, no, that was good fun. I had a mate of mine named Jack Van Togger and that, and because we were in the battalion right from the start together and that, Jack and I and that, we used to go to the Americans Air Force Club and go and drink there because you'd buy a whiskey for 15 cents and stuff like that. So we used to go there, get drunk, then they'd chuck us in the back of the Jeep, the MPs, then they'd chuck us out of the lines and that, and then we'd try and get back to the barracks and that, and one morning we only made it at daylight and that, in time to bloody all go and have a shower and then get dressed and hop in the truck and go back to Nui Dat. But yeah, they used to be good fun. Because the Americans loved us, you know. They loved the Australians, you know. I just love the way you Aussies talk, you know. You tell them, that's off. But that was good fun, you know.
Yeah, so there's good relationships with the American soldiers.
Americans, yeah. Mm. Yep. When I went to R&R and I went to Bangkok and that, I went on there with two Australians and a plane full of Americans and that. And they just wanted to buy you grog all the time and stuff like that. So we just accepted it. That's good. Yeah, one of the Americans and that, we hung around with him a bit in Bangkok. He's a good guy. Bangkok was good fun. Enjoyed that. Yeah, and then we had to come back. Our section commander was a guy by the name of Kenny Johnson and that. Kenny was ex-SAS on his first tour and that. They used to drop him out in the bush and that, two of them, SAS guys, and then they'd try and work out where the troop, what the movements are doing and stuff like that. And then they'd be out in the bush for 6 weeks and, you know, and they'd have to survive pretty much on the land, that sort of stuff. And so Kenny and that, well, he was a, what you call a true soldier and that. I think it was in December, I think it was about the 5th or 15th of December and that, in 1970, 6th Platoon was setting up a ambush around, I think it's called De Courtney Rubber Plantation. And so half of the platoon went one side, and our 9 section, with a part of, well, there was 7 section and that, we went on the eastern side of it, and we set up on a track, but as we were about to set up and that, we seen the group, so we chased them. And it was just on dark and that, and then they disappeared, so we came back and we set up this ambush and that, where there was, I think there was 14 of us, and that, we set up our claymores, you know, the machine guns down the track and all that sort of stuff. And at that stage and that, I had the M79 and I was sitting down the back pit alongside Shorty Poulton. And anyway, about 9 o'clock, these logs and that decided to attack us. I was just sitting looking out and they threw a grenade. And with that grenade and that, they wounded Kenny Johnson in the foot. And then everything, claymores, everything went, you know, everything went berserk and that, and she's on that. And so, anyway, Shorty is alongside me and that, and he got shot in the shoulder, through the shoulder and that. And then platoon commander had me to go up the front where Kenny Johnson was and that, and then to use the M79 and that. And I can always remember the first shot I had, and the bloody thing went for, it went for miles before it exploded. And so then I had to work out that, you know, I had to try and bounce them off the rubber trees and that, get about 30 metres out. And anyway, meanwhile, Kenny and that was in a fair bit of pain. And Ken was, you know, coming in and out of consciousness, and he'd wake up and load his magazine up, and he'd be shooting in the trees, you know, and then the pain would get him, and then he'd flake out again, and then a little bit later on, he'd wake up again and do that, and he did that 3 times, and that. The contact went on for about 40 minutes, 45 minutes and that. And luckily in that, we only had Kenny and Shorty Poulton wounded. And so then the APCs came out and secured the area, and we'd killed 10. And then, you know, like later on, the Chiu Hoys, you know, they were the Viet Cong that had surrendered, and so they interrogated them, and they believed that we killed 23 of them, and that, and there was a group of 40 that was attacking us. So, you know, we consider ourselves bloody lucky after that night. Kenny and Shorty got wounded, then I was section commander again. Just didn't seem there was a future being a section commander in our section. I stayed second commander in that for about a month and a half and that. And then I told the platoon commander that I didn't want to be the section commander. At 19, I didn't want the responsibility of all these young fellas, you know, all these other guys, you know what I mean?
You were only 19 at the time.
Yep. I did learn that there's a difference in being shit scared and highly excited and that. And I think during the contact and that, some of the guys were absolutely, you know, like shit scared and that. And I think I was more like I was highly excited, you know what I mean, with the adrenaline and that sort of stuff. And the only reason I think that is that the ones that were actually shit scared could remember more actual details of what actually happened. Whereas us that are highly excited and that, you know, we remember them, but not to the actual detail. You know, and I only found this out after a few years, and they like halfway up army reunions and you meet the guys, because the contact I had beforehand, I was shit scared then. you know what I mean? I reckon I was shit scared then because I can remember the details of actually what happened, you know, more so than the other guys can. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I can remember where everyone was and...
How vivid is that still today?
Oh, pretty much, yeah. I don't have nightmares or anything about that. I do other things, but not that.
This is fairly early on in your time in Vietnam.
Yeah, that's in the, we got there in May, and that, so that was in December, that last contact.
So how long were you stationed in Vietnam in total?
We were 10 days over the 12 months. I think we got on the boat on about the 15th or 16th, and it took 10 days to get back.
And what was that journey like?
Good and relaxing, a bit boring at times, no? But see, everyone was going back to... Well, we went back to Townsville for a parade, but then everyone split up, disappeared. See, I never went back to the battalion after that. When I was in Vietnam and that, in the last couple of months I was over there and that, my mum was a little bit crook, so I put in an application for discharge and that. Jack and I, we were discussing the matter and we thought, you know, because we were the last battalion to do a full tour, we were thinking that when we went back, what we were going to do and that for the next couple of years, 2.5 years, and that, do EMI bobs and stuff like that all the time, you know, and stuff like that. So mum was crook, so I used that as an excuse to put in for a discharge and I got mine and Jack didn't. My discharge came through about 2 months before the end of the tour. I was supposed to have been sent home immediately, but they didn't. They kept me until the end of the tour. I found out I was getting discharged. It was through a mate that worked in battalion headquarters told me that. They didn't tell me that until a few weeks before, maybe 3 or 4 weeks beforehand.
So you weren't to know? You officially weren't meant to
weren't
know?
Weren't meant to know until... Yeah.
How did that change your feelings of...
The army?
Of where you were, and the situation.
See, the other part too is that they put me in promotion for Lance Corporal, and that was withheld pending discharge. You know what I mean? So the army, they put it up everywhere they bloody could, just about, you know what I mean? I don't think they treated you fairly in it. Like other guys and that, you know, they'd promote them if they signed on and stuff like that shit, you know, and that's bullshit. You know, if you've done your time, you've done your time, you get out, don't you? I think that's how I see it. There's another thing about the army and that when they train you by abusing you and all that sort of stuff and, you know, cursing you and carrying on. And they train you so that you react as soon as, you know, like you act instantly in that, and they want you to not fight but retaliate. That's how they train you. And so you spend 3 years in the army trained to retaliate. And so then when it comes to being discharged, they check your teeth and that and check your heart and make sure there's nothing wrong with you and that, but they don't worry anything about your bloody mental case. So they send you out there as that an angry little ex-soldier. You go through your life and someone picks on you or does something to you and that, well, you know, you want to clock them straight away, you know what I mean? That's how they've taught you to react, but they've tuned you in to do that stuff, but they don't detune you. You know what I mean? They just throw you out. You're done. You know what I mean, sort of thing, and check your medical and you're right, which is bloody bullshit, you know? I don't understand it, how they do it. You watch an American-made movie and that, about a soldier that's come home from the war, you know, and is quietly trying to get on with his life and that, and someone frightens him, and next one he's got him by the throat, you know? You know, it must be a common problem everywhere and that. Normal people, you frighten normal people and that, and I say, oh, you bugger, you know? But we're different.
How was the adjustment of returning to Australia? How was it like? How was that first initial couple of years of returning? Like, what was that like?
I think we drank a lot. You know, like, I spent the first 25 years of my life probably pissed 3, maybe 4 nights a week. And then after that, I couldn't handle the grog, you know what I mean? But, you know, it's just, I guess it was a means of, you get that 3 or 4 hour coma sleep. So now I have to take drugs to get that.
To sleep?
Hmm. If I don't take drugs, I mean, I don't take a drug. But if I don't take a drug and that, my dreams are nightmares. Whereas, as it is, when I dream every night, and if I take the drug, I'm all right. But if I don't take them for about 3 or 4 days, and that, my dreams come more violent.
Guaranteed.
Guaranteed. Yep. I never used to take them and that, but. And then I got to the point where, you know, like I was waking up in a cold sweat, my heart doing about 200 miles an hour and stuff like that. And so then I decided that one day I'm probably going to have a heart attack, you know. And so now I take them regularly, every night. Fail. Don't fail. And the worst part about it is that when they put you on drugs like that, or give you something like it's an antidepressant, when they give it to you, you got to find one that suits you. And you might have to go through a dozen to actually find the one that you're comfortable with.
Mm.
One that I've got, I've had it for 10 years, 10 or 15 years, I reckon now. But I've got no room to move. I can't go any heavier, stronger. I'm at the maximum now, but still here.
What age are you today, Rob?
69.
69. Fantastic.
That's 50 years ago since I've been to Vietnam.
When you returned?
It'll be 50 years ago.
It's 50 years, yeah.
I would have, what's it, in June now? 50 years ago I was in Vietnam. It's pretty scary when you can come back and say, 50 years ago I was doing this. But
have you been back?
No, I can't go back. Two reasons. I don't want to go back there, and I don't want to ride in an aeroplane for that long. I've only had 2 trips in aeroplane since Vietnam, and I don't enjoy them. I get claustrophobic, or I don't know what it is. It's just something about it.
50 years on, are you glad that you did this as a young person?
I think it's one of those things that you've done, and it's a part of your life, and there's no real regrets. If you knew what you knew, you probably wouldn't do it again. You know what I mean? I've got some, you know, good mates and that from it. Every time we have a reunion, that it's really good to catch up to them and that. When you have dreams, and that you're trying to get out of the house, but you can't find the way house, can't find the corners to get out. You know, it's an ongoing dream that most vets have. I think someone's chasing you, they're going to shoot you and that, but you can't get out, and you always wake up just as they shoot. You know? But yeah, when I got out of the army, I went back on the farm with my parents and that. But at that stage, now we're in a pretty severe drought, and that, so I couldn't exist on the farm. We didn't have any money, you know. So then I got a job driving trucks interstate. So I drove trucks for about 4 years interstate. In that time, I got married, and we purchased a house in Wodonga Avenue in Loxton. That, and we had 2 daughters and a son. Now during that time, and that. Stopped driving trucks interstate, then I worked for Gold North for 8 years, and at delivering frozen food around the joint. In the last 2 years, I was a manager of the depot. Then in 83, you know, we bought a 7-day week deli and that in Loxton. We had that for 10 years. After that, then I bought a Nippy's Round, and then we had that for nearly 10 years. And I reckon it was in later in that when I started having a lot of trouble, like mentally and that. I started hitting the wall a bit, and I was having tinnitus pretty badly. That's when I went to Vietnam Vets, and that, and then we did the lifestyle check, and then they reckon I was stuffed in the head, 2003, and that I got a TPI. Since I've been TPI and that, I've been involved in the Vietnam Vets, looking after grandkids. Spending time around home, we built a house out of Loxton, out of town. We lived 3 km out of town, and away from everybody. And yeah, so I spent a lot of time working around on that, paving and stuff like that. Chasing a few fish with my son. The last 5 years I've been president of the RSL here. I was a treasurer of the Vietnam Vets for 9 years. And then I've only just got rid of that, got given that away. But in that time that we've achieved a lot in the RSL, we created the memorial room, and that we built a wall across here, created that, done the paving up the outside, had the toilets renovated, air conditioning, had the kitchen renovated.
How many members are in the branch here locally?
Well, we've got about 100, 110. But when I became president, we had 36 financial members, I think it was. And that, but at the stage that the RSL had sort of hit the wall a bit. When I became president of the RSL and that, I found it hard that your mug was stuck over the local paper all the time, you know. But it worked out. It's going out right. I'm starting to get partially used to it. And that, but yeah.
Robert Manuel, thank you very much for talking with me today. It's been an absolute privilege to meet you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. My pleasure. Cheers.
You have been listening to The RSL, A Time to Celebrate, 2020.